Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show featuring the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson. Last night, those of us who tuned in to KHOI or other media heard the Republican presidential nominee declare himself the law and order candidate, and surprisingly to many, invoke the black children of Ferguson among those he sought to protect. Today we will be discussing issues of law and order and being black, both in Baton Rouge, where KHOI has a sister community radio station, WHYR, and in Ames, Iowa, where the Ames Progressive Alliance has sought to expand a dialogue on these issues. This week started with news that a gunman had shot and killed three Baton Rouge police officers, injuring another. This after a white Baton Rouge policeman killed an unarmed black man, Alton Sterling, at a convenience store on July 5th, an event that itself began a week of turmoil and violence. Let's dial back to the Friday of that week, July 8th, after the killing also of Philando Castile in Minneapolis and after the killing of five police officers in Dallas during a Black Lives Matter rally. My first guests were on the radio at their community radio station in Baton Rouge, producing a special 3.5-hour show to facilitate the conversations that so need to happen. Here's a brief clip from that show.
We do have some more news continuing to roll in to our desks here at WHYR. We've received more notification from the Advocate that the FBI has issued a report about potential anti-police violence in Baton Rouge and Shreveport, that the FBI's New Orleans Field Division has warned law enforcement agencies in Baton Rouge and Shreveport to be watchful for potential violence in the coming days, that there are possibly multiple groups calling for planning riots or planning violence against law enforcement in those communities. You know, I think a lot of things are coming to a boiling point, and folks, you know, so far I'm extraordinarily proud of our city. We have not had these explosions that we've seen on the news in Dallas, in Ferguson, in Baltimore, and I'm just prayerful and hopeful that we can keep it that way, because it's tragic enough, it's bad enough, it's tense enough as it is. We don't need more violence. We don't need more people getting killed. Folks, be careful out there tonight. Be very, very careful and be safe.
Just say one thing. I just want to say, look, anybody thinking about engaging that kind of activity, you're inviting a war that you and we cannot win.
Yeah, we'll lose.
Right. Exactly.
That's not worth your life, and that is not the way. That's not what we're fighting for. We're fighting for something much bigger, a much bigger prize.
With me on the phone are Eric Hatfield and Perry Daniels. Their regular show on WHYR is called Louisiana All-American Sports Show, but they've been stepping up with special call-in shows such as you just heard. Eric and Perry, welcome to our show here in Ames, Iowa.
Good morning. How are you doing? Eric Hatfield here. Thank you for having me.
Sure. So first of all, Eric, I'd like to ask, how are things down there in Baton Rouge? You've had a lot of visitors, it seems. You know, from the lovely nurse from Pennsylvania in the photo, peacefully confronting the militarized policeman, to this gunman who drove there from Kansas City.
Yeah, it's been very tense right now. The last few weeks here in Baton Rouge. You know, this kind of an incident I kind of thought was inevitable, just in light of some of the stuff that was happening around the country. And you know, when it happened, I think everybody put their best foot forward, their best intentions forward. But as tensions escalated, you know, starting with the protesting that happened, and then there were a lot of arrests, and there were reports of some abuses at those protests. I think tensions escalated, and then obviously, you know, from a national standpoint, I think everything boiled over with the Dallas shooting, and then of course the very unfortunate incident last Sunday with the police killing here. So we've had a lot of attention on our little town that has nothing to do with LSU football or country music or some of the better things that people come here for. It's been a trying last couple of weeks.
Yeah, when I heard that clip that we just played, and it was somewhat chilling, and I wonder how you felt when you read the news bulletin on that Friday night from the FBI about groups in Baton Rouge planning a retaliation.
You know, the situation was so fluid at that time. And in a crisis situation, there always I found, at least when I observe from the outside looking in, there are always what I would call a Chicken Little scenario, in which folks think the sky is falling. And so as it rolled across the desk, I guess the maybe more naive or in denial part of my personality might have thought, well, okay, this is just, you know, this is going to happen. There are always going to be, you know, crazies calling in, threatening the worst, threatening to burn the city down. And so I read it, and I kind of took it with a bit of a grain of salt, but at the same time, since the source was the Advocate, the local newspaper, reporting something from the FBI, I felt compelled to read it over the air just in case. And unfortunately, the worst possibility came to fruition. It wasn't just somebody calling in a threat. It wasn't just a crazy. You had a very disturbed person with a lot of firepower who drove from several states away to come and kill some cops, and then regrettably, that's, you know, really sadly, that's what he did. And so when I woke up last Sunday morning and saw that, it was just the most just kind of sickening feeling I think anybody could have as a citizen of Baton Rouge. It really it was very unsettling, and, you know, I think those words, you know, it's actually the first time I've heard them since that Friday, that particular clip, and now that I'm listening to it, it's quite haunting, to tell you the truth. And much like Attorney Tucker, that was the gentleman with the deeper voice who was speaking, it has made matters worse. It has increased tensions, and it's put a dark cloud over our city.
Yeah. Well, the individual was not, however, associated with a group, which is the kind of report that the FBI had mentioned, you know, that groups were preparing to retaliate. And so that was a little different from the intelligence they were getting. So, you know, the week between these two events, we saw Baton Rouge with just a whole score of militarized policemen out on the streets. Is that where you still are?
I have not seen the images come in. And it's interesting because that very first night of protesting, which was actually the night we were on the air that Friday after the Alton Sterling incident had happened. You know, that incident wasn't very far from where I live, and I remember having to take an alternate route home because I'd heard about the protesting on the air, and that's when the very next day in the newspaper, the next couple of days, we saw the, you know, the folks with the SWAT material and the trained military rifles, and we've all seen the images. I'd say in the past week, I don't think I've seen anything like that. I don't think there have been, I'm not aware that there have been any large organized gatherings, so I would assume without the large organized gatherings, there haven't been the cops with the military gear out in the streets pointing guns at folks. But the fact that it would even come to that around here, again, was very alarming. You know, I understand that the police need to engage in crowd control, and under the circumstances, and I even said this myself to one of my broadcast partners, I would probably be a little scared, honestly, in the very beginning. You know, if I saw that many people, not really knowing them, if there's a lack of communication, I think, between the police and some of the people with whom they have conflict, I think it was another example. And, you know, I think there might have been a fear factor, a lack of communication, but I just thought that was really over the top for all that riot gear. I think it escalated tensions.
Yeah.
I think it made matters worse. So that being said, haven't seen that of late, hope to never see it again, and I think it's a bit of a problem. I think we need to have, there needs to be some kind of dialogue between the citizenry and the police to prevent those kinds of images from being shown again. That's not what we want around here.
Well, and dialogue, of course, is your business.
Right.
As a volunteer producer of a show, your show is called Louisiana All-American Sports Show, but you've been doing a number of specials down there in Baton Rouge on the community radio station where people can call in, and you also have guests who you've prearranged. And what kind of conversations are you having? What are some of the callers and emotions expressed that you think are healing and beneficial for this dialogue to begin?
We truly have run the gamut of guests and people who have been on some of these shows. And really, we've spoken very, very little about sports in the last couple of weeks. It's been almost all related, the conversation has been almost all related to what's going on in the community. And We've had different kinds of community leaders. We've had church pastors call in. We've had volunteer attorney groups that are interested in protecting, civil liberties. We've had sometimes just ordinary people in the community call up and express their opinions on either side of the subject. We had an attorney who's been practicing law in Louisiana for quite some time who's very much kept his ear to the ground in studio with us. We've really had a very wide variety of people on those special shows expressing their opinions. Hang on, put you on hold for like 2 seconds. I think that's Perry Daniels. I think we lost him. Hold on.
We're talking to Eric Catfield and Perry Daniels. These are hosts of a call-in show down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. They've been addressing the tensions in the community. So final words, Eric. We've got to move on to a group in our own community who's making efforts to build lines of communication before anything bad happens here in Ames.
Okay. So I have Coach Perry Daniels on the line with us. I'm sorry for the interruption. Please continue.
Perry, your thoughts. Tell us what this has meant to you to be able to host a show like this on community radio down in Baton Rouge.
Well, the whole purpose of the show, Greta, was to stimulate dialogue and change the perception in the African-American community. Southern University was very good to me in training me regarding socialization effect of media images. So that has always been the goal of Louisiana All-American Sports. Let me say that, the police killing should not take more weight than the Alton Sterling killing. And for people to place more weight on those citizens' lives over Alton Sterling's life is part of the reason why we need a Louisiana All-American Sports.
I hear you. And the perceptions in the community that that African Americans have, you want them to stand up for their rights, their civil rights.
Absolutely. Not just civil rights, Greta. It's a human rights issue, the way that the police community polices the African-American community. We charge them with apprehending folks, not to prosecute and execute.
Right. You're right. It's a human rights issue. Well, we're going to have to close out right now. Thank you so much for joining us. We wish you all the best down there in Baton Rouge and hope that things improve and hope that the dialogue continues.
Thank you for having us. Go Jaguars. Southern University.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Greta. Very much appreciate it. Thank you for having
Thank you, Eric. Okay, again, those are two producers at a community radio station in Baton Rouge. When we come back, our monthly contributors, Victoria Shapinski and Ann Kinzel from the Ames Progressive Alliance, will take the floor with their guests from a community conversation about race and policing in Ames, held about a week ago at Body of Christ Church, just around the corner from us in downtown Ames. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio.
Good morning. This is Ann Kinzel from the Ames Progressive Alliance, and we're here at KHOI for the morning news show. Today we're going to be talking about race and conversations about race. Our guests today are Malik Burton, student at Iowa State University, Justin Neely, also student at Iowa State. I think you're both in the journalism college? Yes. And Pastor Anthony Jones of the Ames Middle School, Pastor Robert Knight of our New Birth Baptist Church in Ames, and Chief Chuck Sykosh of the Ames Police Department. Well, welcome to all of you. I look forward to some interesting conversation this morning. We're so glad to have you here as we continue the conversation that was started last week at the Partnering to Protect event at the BCC Church here in Ames. We think that everyone in America is troubled and talking about violence occurring in our country over the last several years. We've seen young black men be victims of police shootings, and now the police themselves being shot and killed. We've seen acts of apparent terrorism and the senseless gun violence we discussed at our last show with Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. Now, we all know there's opinions galore about what's going on in America, but at the Ames Progressive Alliance, we focus on the Ames community, and that's what we're going to do with you this morning. We want to talk about these issues from an Ames perspective. So, Malik and Julian, I'm going to start with you, and whoever wants to chime in first, go for it. I'd like us you to tell us a little bit about yourselves. What are you doing here in Ames as students?
So, my name is Julian Neely. I'm a sophomore at Iowa State studying journalism and mass communications. I'm also going for the leadership certificate that Iowa State provides. I'm also a cyclone aide, and then I'm the vice president of the Black Student Alliance on campus, and I'm an anchor for ISU TV.
You're a busy guy.
My name is Malik Burton. I'm entering my junior year here at Iowa State University, studying speech communications, minoring in African American studies and criminal justice, and I am the president of the Black Student Alliance. I am a community advisor, otherwise known as ACA. I'm part of the George Washington Carver Program, and I can go on and on and on.
Okay. Well, I want to hit a few things with you guys first before we get to the rest of our guests. So I want to ask you really what I think is the most salient question that we might get to this morning, given what we discussed at the church last week. And I want you to tell me if you've experienced what you consider to be discrimination in Ames, and can you tell me a little bit about that if you have?
Funny thing about that is at 3 days after that discussion we had at that church, we experienced something. We were at the mall getting snow cones with mm-hmm. one of our friends, and she was getting out the car, and something like got snagged on her skirt, so she was fixing it by this car, and this white individual was like locked his car, and, like, beeped it multiple times, like, and then stared at us. And we're like, we're not doing anything. She's just fixing her skirt, and we're going to get snow cones. And he just had this, like, mean look on his face, like we were going to steal his car. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, dude, are you serious right now? Like, and we were dressed pretty well, too. Like, when people say you have to dress the part, you have to dress really nice, or you won't experience this. We were dressed very mm-hmm. well, and we still had that happen to us. So it was really, like,
Yeah, that was really eye-opening, and that day was already a rough day, so it was like, oh, how are we dealing with this? But I personally dealt with that, and then also a lot of what you will call microaggression. So, you know, you have Sci-Ride, and you'll get on the bus, and the bus will be full, and you'll be like, you know what, I'm going to move my bag and not be selfish and let somebody else sit down. And they'll stand right next to the seat but won't sit down next to you. And it's like, okay, my feelings are hurt. Everybody else has a seat partner. Why don't you just sit by me? I also had an issue my freshman year where I was accused of stealing something. And the only description that the white individual gave was that he was tall and black. And I was like, that can fit about 25 different people in this area. But all of a sudden, like, I'm the person that get pointed out. And then it ended up the person just misplaced their purse in the first place. And before looking for it, you decided to point it at an individual of color, which was my problem with that.
Okay. Pastor Jones and Pastor Knight, you've heard these young men describe what they say as microaggressions here in our community. Have you experienced the same kind of things?
Well, yes, you know, just like I shared a similar story at the event last week, Thursday. And, you know, I shared a story. You know, this is my fifth year assistant principal at the middle school here in Ames. And a colleague of mine, you know, we were standing in the office one day and she made this comment that she didn't see me as a black person. And it startled me at first, because at first I was shocked that this staff member actually said it. And, so I asked her, I said, so what do you mean, you don't see me as a black person? And she said, well, you know, many of the parents and students that we have coming here, they're loud, and, you know, some of them are uneducated. And so I said, well, you do know they're, other aspects of black people, right? And she said, well, I'm not saying that. I was like, okay. But I didn't confront her like I want. I mean, I had so much anger, inside of me because I was so shocked she said it. And then I started questioning my own self. So, okay. So what is a black person supposed to be like? And I dealt with that. I mean, it took me until the next day to actually be able to come back to actually ask her more questions and to be able to pull her to the side and say, to let her know how that made me feel, and to let this staff member know that, you know, when you see families come into the school, there's a customer service to how we treat families, regardless of, you know, how they act or this perceived notion of what a you know, African-American person should be like. You should always treat them with kindness. But that's something that still affects me even to this day. You know, she apologized and said, you know, that wasn't her intent. But I also reminded her, you know, be careful, you know, saying that to someone else of, you know, I don't see you as black. What does that mean? And I still find myself a little guarded around this staff member because I just don't know, you know, what will come out of their mouths. And so, you know, what I try to do, I always try to educate that staff member of when we have different people come into the office. So that's one of the stories I share.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, for me, I've been in Ames a long time. And some of the things that I have seen, there was a period of time where in Ames, if you were African-American and you wore a suit, there was a certain modicum of respect that you were given. And I have seen over time where that has now changed. And it's now based on the color of your skin. And no matter whether you wear a suit or not, you're still treated in a certain way. And seeing that in Ames has just been eye-opening to me. I can walk by a woman in a public area and I can see them grab their purse and hold it closer, no matter how I'm dressed. I mean, we see these things, and I don't want to say that I'm hyper-vigilant in that matter, but it's something that you notice when you're African-American and you see people do these things. You recognize them. For example, the parking lot with the key fob, I see it all the time and I laugh. And it's just something that affects you, and people don't understand when you're African-American, you have that happen to you. It's just something you've dealt with all your life, and it creates a certain amount of pressure in your life.
Yeah, thank you, all of you, for sharing these details, which I think are probably not a whole lot of fun to actually have to share. At our event last week, I think one of the most important things that happened is that we heard stories that members of our community who are not African American perhaps thought didn't happen in Ames, that somehow Ames is immune from the troubles of the rest of America. Mm-hmm. So I want to thank you this morning for sharing these stories, because I think people need, it's a cliche, but people need to hear. So thank you. I'm going to flip to you for a second, Chief Sykosh. If you could tell us a little bit about your background. How many years have you been in policing?
Well, I came to Ames in 1982 and worked at the university for about 20 years, various roles, faculty, student affairs. In fact, I was reflecting earlier this week on how did I end up in this world? And the way I ended up here was in my student affairs role. I just found when I was dealing with students who were having difficulty, students who had found themselves in crisis or in trouble, I was very often working with police officers who had been part of the initial response to try to assist that student. And it was this kind of odd natural progression to the front lines of working with people in crisis, which is policing in today's world. We deal with people in all kinds of crisis. So I spent a lot of time with the university police, came to the city of Ames 2002, and have been working with the city police department since that time.
How has policing changed in your view, and has it changed with respect to the African-American community?
Well, policing has changed tremendously and continues to change. This is obviously a time of self-examination for police departments and police officers. It's a time of national conversations about even what this function should be in our communities. And so there have been tremendous changes in the way that police officers are being asked to respond to crisis situations. Let me just pick one area that we're concerned about locally, and that's people in a mental health crisis. And let me cast that net broadly. It may be mental health. It may be mental illness that's undiagnosed or diagnosed and untreated or diagnosed, treated, but the person just isn't supported in our community and needs help just getting through the day and feeling like being a part of our community. We're struggling as a community, I think, to support those folks and care for those folks. And as I talk to people in our community about that crisis that we face, I ask them, who do you call? What do you do? Well, I call 911. And we send police. We've become the Swiss Army knife for every problem. And we're taking young, talented criminal justice graduates and putting them in a uniform and trying to solve a vast array of very complex social, personal, medical problems. Sometimes I'm astounded at what they do accomplish, but I'm also troubled by the lack of a broader network of responses to those situations. People in short-term emotional crises, family disputes, suicide, fights with children, who comes to those? Who assists with those? Who responds to those? Unfortunately, in today's world, we're called to sometimes by teenage children to mediate a dispute with the parents about when to turn off the video games. We have a lot of people in our community who need broader engagement, broader support, broader conversations, and some alternatives that stop short of calling the police for those kinds of things. I think our officers would be perfectly happy to go through the day and not respond to another crisis call. Those are unsettling, those are dangerous, and those are many times heart-wrenching because the real heartache is we're probably going to be back there in a day or two with the same problem. So I'm concerned as a community we have a broad array of crisis situations that individuals and families find themselves in, and somehow we've got to get back to working with each other to prevent the crisis and help these families with the problems that they're encountering.
Thank you. Well, you've certainly given us a lot to reflect on the complex role of the police in our modern society, and one that is difficult for both those who serve and then when things go wrong for everything else. So I want to focus here on Pastor Jones and Pastor Knight. I'd like you to tell us a little bit about your involvement in the movement to address police shootings in America or other racial issues that you might have been involved in? Go ahead. Don't be shy.
Fine. Actually, I've taken a role. I've known Chief Sykos for several years, and I am on a committee that is responsible for mentoring a certain group of officers in the community that deal with some of the situation that Chief Sykos has spoken about. And we are, it's called a Safe Neighborhood Team. And what we do is we go on rides, and if there's an issue that they don't believe they can handle and would need some assistance with, they would give us a call and we would go to that area. Maybe we have an expertise in that area and would be able to speak to a group of people that may be able to de-escalate a situation. And so we've spent some time, and fortunately we haven't had an opportunity to use that, but it's great to stay in touch with them and see the officers and get to know them on a personal level. And so that's one way that that I am involved. There's several other boards and committees that I'm a part of. I was a chaplain for Story County Jail and dealing with individuals there. And for me, it's all about your relationship with Christ, and that's the aspect that I've been approaching it from. And so I believe being a pastor, particularly in African-American community, has been a part of being an activist in the community, not necessarily activating and doing certain things, but being responsible and helping the community grow.
Okay. Thank you.
And my role is, you know, I keep laughing when you introduce me as a pastor working in the middle school. No, which I love, because I've made this statement to some of my colleagues that I actually work at the largest youth ministry in Ames. And so, but we have the opportunity to work with Ames Police Department through our school resource, with our school resource officer program, where we have officers in the school district. And so that gives us an opportunity to build firsthand relationships with officers in Ames. And it's not always a crisis response. At least that's what, you know, we try to do, especially at the middle school. But we have an officer who comes to our school twice a week at the middle school, and he kind of goes around to the other school districts and kind of sets his day as fit. It's about building relationships with officers in the good times. And so what I mean by that is giving children the opportunity to see officers sitting at the lunchroom table with them, passing out stickers and deputizing young students to be officers, and it builds relationships with those officers, and it causes students to be able to trust officers. So when they see a uniform, the first thing in their mind is not a confrontation or this officer is coming to do harm, but this officer is coming to protect. And so we have those situations, but again, we also see the other side, where I know we've gotten a lot better of making sure that we respond from the school side with students based upon, whether it's a discipline issue, and using our counselors when there's a mental health issue, and using our officer as the last resort.
Sure.
So not using our officer just because we see a badge, he's our first response because we got a student who is using foul language in the class. And so, again, being able to train our teachers to be able, and our counselors and our staff, to be able to deal with behaviors at the school level and not treat a school discipline as a community discipline or behavior problem. So that's one of the areas that I try to work with our officers.
Okay. Well, Malik and Julian, you've heard what the pastors have said about what they're doing in the community. Now, in Ames, students now make up almost more than half of our community. Mm-hmm. Yet, in a way, it's another community within. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to know a little bit about what you are doing to address racial issues, police shooting, microaggressions, whatever it is that you see in your role as students at Iowa State University.
So I'm from Des Moines, Iowa, so I've been born and raised there. I've been heavily involved in the Des Moines community, so I've had meetings with representatives. I've had meetings with the chief of police in Johnston. I have met multiple police officers in Des Moines and had this type of discussion about what things can change, what could prevent these type of shootings from happening in Des Moines or in Iowa, period. So it's having those type of discussions and then executing those. At my church, we've had the FBI, we've had attorneys, and multiple other people that are in the law enforcement come to our church and have these type of discussions, informing us what is going on about different events, different knowledge about the laws or rights that we have as citizens, and that in ways of when you get pulled over, how do you handle that situation, and different things just to protect us from being shot down or just feeling scared or mm-hmm. having that fear. Here we're starting to do more of volunteering and getting involved with the youth. So I've been working with some organizations down in Des Moines with trying to go out and volunteer. We've had opportunity to go tutor in the fall, so we're most likely be taking that opportunity. It's really just educating and having those type of discussions. Mm-hmm. We're doing a lot of self-knowledge, like learning more about our history and learning about more of like the laws that are in place. So I've been doing research on the laws that are in place that have protected these officers from murdering these black men, black women, and black children. Also learning about the bills that might be going in to effect soon that will also be protecting those officers. So I personally, I just have been doing like a whole bunch of research and trying to educate myself about different things that are going on in the country.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Molly?
To echo Julian and with the self-research and the discussions that we have, it's really just to teach people about perspective. That's kind of been my whole viewpoint on this thing, is that each and every single one of us was raised a certain way. Each and every single one of us has a different perspective and viewpoint on things. Mm-hmm. But in order for us to move forward, we must understand each other's perspective. And then when we understand each other's perspective, then we can progress along and to make progress and change. So a lot of things, whether it's social media or even in person, being able to take time away from social media, because sometimes seeing the events happen in our country over and over again is heavy on the soul, especially if you identify with the individuals that are being killed. Mm-hmm. And then you have a chance to step away and to be able to let your emotions, some type of release. The message that someone gave me was self-care, to be able to take a minute, let all the emotions out, and then get ready for work. So a lot of the work that I've been doing is here on our campus. Because, again, Iowa State is a predominantly white institution, and to be able to help those students who may not identify as students of color, to be able to see where, again, like the Black Lives Matter movement is coming from, understanding mm-hmm. that, yes, all lives do matter, but we're not taken away from it. It's not coming from a negative standpoint. It's coming from a positive, more constructive viewpoint. So that's either through programming for, again, the Black Student Alliance. There's a forum underway as well that will be happening in the fall. And then also just trying to get in contact with other individuals and be able to teach them that AIMS, again, is a community, and that wherever you come from, there is a community, and that we need to come together instead of divide, and then understand that violence and oppression is our enemy, not each other.
And also, like, being a part of the Black Student Alliance is that we have a lot of students coming from different areas. Mm-hmm. So they've never experienced being in the Midwest or even in Iowa, period, in a small town. So mm-hmm. it's allowing those students to feel comfortable and like feel like they belong here on campus, instead of feeling that, oh, I'm the only black person here. I don't see anybody else that looks like me. I don't feel comfortable here. I see people just staring at me. It's for us, for BSA, we just make sure that we have that sense of community for them. We have academic, political, community, and social events for them to feel like they belong and are part of the community. Because we have students that have never seen anybody of color. Either they're black, Asian, Hispanic, Latino, or whatever. They have never seen that. So when they come here, they already have the stereotype of what these individuals are. And then that causes conflict on the Iowa State campus. And then we have to be like, okay, we got to handle this. So it's a time to educate these individuals about what we are actually about, instead of and getting rid of those stereotypes. So we do a lot of awareness. We do a lot of educating mm-hmm. other students. And that's what most of our job is about, too. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you. Our time is unfortunately limited this morning. Chief, you'd like to say something?
I would. I mean, I've been in Ames a long time and part of the university and part of the city, and somebody just needs to say how embarrassing it is when these incidents occur to the students who come here, the talented people who come to work here, the folks who've been a part of our community for a long time. It's just flat out embarrassing for this community. There are great things about this community, but these experiences are real. Our officers see them. We get calls that are based on these things. We do a lot of training in these areas. We have people from all over the world who come to this community and want to participate in the university or in some of the activities or other businesses that are here. And in order to make them safe and welcome, we've had to do lots of cultural training for our officers, because we have people coming from countries where the function of the police is very different. And we have to build a different kind of relationship and different trust with them. We're acutely aware of that. And yet we're part of the community. We represent the community. And I just have to say how embarrassing it is. It's real. It's true. It happens. And it's embarrassing for this community when the opportunity to interact with talented people from around the world is one of the things that brings us here and makes Ames great. And then that's how we behave.
And that's the beginning of the rest of the conversation, because we haven't had enough time and we need to keep talking about this. And last Thursday, the Ames Progressive Alliance gathered at the Body of Christ Church. We began that conversation. This is the next part of it. Nationally, people are talking about getting to know each other. I met three new people today, and my life is richer for it. And I encourage all of us to find those opportunities that we just have. We talk. I want to thank Pastor Robert Knight, Chief Chuck Sykosh, Dr. Anthony Jones, Malik Burton, and Julian Neely for joining us today. Every month, the Ames Progressive Alliance has a program here at KHOI on the fourth Friday. It will rerun again at noon and again at 7 p.m. It also will be posted to the Ames Progressive Alliance Facebook page, and you can always find any show on the KHOI website, and it's local talk. Also, just for your calendars, the next event that the Ames Progressive Alliance will be hosting will be on August 18th at Torrent Brewery, and we will be discussing issues of accessibility for people in our community who have a variety of disabilities. We'll also have fun. So please join us and keep the conversation going. We have a great community, and we can always make it better. Thank you.
Thank you, Victoria. I want to thank all our guests. A lot of people in this country are talking about fear, and the best thing we can do is to come together. Fear is silly in many ways, and the best thing is to meet each other, talk about our issues, and learn. And let's keep doing that together. Thank you.
Welcome back to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. That was a tune by former Ames denizen Jordan Mayland, whose band, Jordan Mayland and the Thermal Detonators, will be performing on Sunday night, supporting another former Ames musician, Devin Frank, who formerly of Poison Control Center and now of the Devin Frank Vanishing Blues Band. All of that will happen over at DG's Tap House on Sunday evening. Doors open at 7 and show starts at 8. With us to discuss this event and to give us a heads up about some other exciting acts in coming months is the manager at DG's, Adam Breimeyer. Welcome, Adam.
Hi, Greta.
So that little ditty by Jordan was from a previous album. I wrote it all down. But his band is releasing a new CD from Nova Labs, the Ames, Iowa recording studio of Brian Dudley. Do you know if they're having that ready for the show? Or
He didn't say he'd have the album ready. I think that they're going to do an official album release soon. I know he has some of the tunes ready. Certainly they will probably be playing a lot of music off of it.
Right.
But yeah, I don't think it's the official release.
Okay,
quite yet.
Well, that we'll have to look forward to that in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a few Ames, Iowa personnel in this band, right?
In Jordan's band?
Yeah, in Jordan's band.
Oh, yeah, many. This band started when he was still in Ames, so it has a lot of our local musicians in it. Matter of fact, one of your own, Paul Hertz, is in this band. So
playing a horn, I understand.
And he usually he plays some synth and organ and Paul's such an amazing musician. So.
Right. And we've got Sean Houston on guitar and Claire Kreuzel playing some...
She does Glockenspiel, actually. She'll play Glockenspiel in it and they all do some singing as well.
Okay. So Devin Frank of the Devin Frank Vanishing Blues Band is from the band Poison Control Center, which was a big band in Ames back in the early 2000s.
They were actually the very first band I saw when I moved to Ames in 2002.
Oh.
Over here at the Octagon Center for the Arts. They were opening for, I think, a band called Circulatory System. It's been a few years.
Wow.
But they were the very first band I saw, and they definitely left an impression on me. When they do play yet, they're just a force of nature.
Okay. Well, they are taking a hiatus right now. But I spoke with Devin yesterday. He talked a little bit about the music scene back then. You might appreciate this, Adam.
There used to be this sort of DIY space. It was actually right on Main Street above one of like the toy shops. It was called the Practice Space. And those shows were just legendary, just always fun dance parties where people would really sort of get into the music. Another fond memory that I end up telling people about was during the 2004 caucuses, when John Kerry was running for president. At the Boheme, I don't know what it's called now, maybe it still exists, there was a rally for John Kerry, and we got asked to be the band for the rally, and there were a bunch of sort of, you know, B and C level celebrities that came there, but Max Weinberg he was famously the drummer on Conan O'Brien's show for his late night show for many years. And then he was also much more importantly, he was the drummer for the Bruce Springsteen's E Street Band. And so he came, and so they wanted a band, like Max had wanted a band to play with, probably like a jazz combo or something, you know, or who knows what they were even looking for, but somehow maybe just people that were working in the Democratic, committee's office or whatever in Ames, they set us up as the band. And so we got to play a few songs with Max Weinberg on drums to a much over capacity Boheme, which was pretty fun and pretty hilarious. It's like caucus time, just the surreal stuff happens. And
right.
That was sort of a nice example that we got to be a part of. The band used to have just like dozens of people, just sort of whoever was around would be playing in the band, and even live shows. Yeah, I remember we played Visha once and we had like 17 people on stage or something.
So that's Devin Frank of the Vanishing Blues Band now. He's down in Columbia, Missouri, getting his PhD in philosophy, something practical to help support his musical career.
That sounds about right for Devin, yeah.
He says this about the name of his band, the Vanishing Blues Band.
You know, it maybe sounds like a blues band, and there are blues elements, but I think, there's blues elements just in rock and roll in general.
Right.
Sometimes we joke that, you know, we just play a different style of music called the Vanishing Blues, which might just, you might think of just as, you know, what rock and roll is. It's sort of, rock and roll started with the blues and then just mixed it with other genres and became its own thing.
And he describes his music with this band as more sort of hippie music, heavily 60s influenced. He even said it had a Donovan vibe.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
and we have a song that will bear that out. But before we go to the music and the outro, remind us again about this show. Who's involved? When is it and where is it?
The show is on Sunday. The doors up at DG's Tap House on Main Street. The doors open at 7. The show will start at 8 with a solo acoustic set from Anna Libera of Des Moines. And then Devin Frank in the Vanishing Blues Band will play. And then Jordan Malin and the Thermal Detonators will close out the night for us. So it should be a really exciting night of music.
Sounds like it. And you have another really exciting event coming up in about a month.
We're going to have Martin Barr of Jethro Tull. He played guitar for Jethro Tull and is the sole and only guitar player and has been. He is going to be here all the way from Great Britain playing at kicking his tour off, actually, at DG's Tap House. We will be by far the smallest venue he will play the whole time he's here. But we're really excited about that. Tickets are on sale, and that show is sure to be one not to miss. It's an exciting event even just for our community to have.
What day is that?
That is Thursday, August 25th.
Okay. And that's Adam Breimeyer from DG's Tap House. We're going to close out with the song by Devin Frank, Vanishing Blues Band. He gave me a song with about a whole lot of girls named for spices. But I don't know if saffron's in there. So anyway, this one's called Cardamom Waves.
In pungent wafts, the cardamom waves drift westward towards the Grand Cascades through the Great Plains and the salt flats of America blows. Oh, the ambrosial scent fills up every single nose, right?
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host, Greta Anderson. We started the show with Eric Davis and Perry Daniels from our sister station in Baton Rouge, WHYR, who have been holding community conversations over the airwaves. We then turned the show over to Ames Progressive Alliance, whose guests included a wonderful roster of folks, Malik Burton, Iowa State University, Julian Neely, also from the Iowa State, Pastor Dr. Anthony Jones, Ames Middle School, and Pastor David Knight from New Birth Baptist Church, Chuck Shikos, the chief of the Ames Police Department. Finally, we had Adam Breimeyer of DG's Tap House, talking about a Sunday night event showcasing bands with deep roots in the Ames community. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you'll also find information about our guests along with relevant links to today's stories. And you can like us on Facebook and get updates on all of our show postings in your news feed. Thanks to webmaster Ron Carson for making that possible. Local Talk was engineered by Jonah DeGeest. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was The Rolling Stones doing Gimme Shelter and Jordan Mayland with a song from his last album. Finally, we're listening right now to Devin Frank, Vanishing Blues Band. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you'd like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.
You know the ones who don't remember, I tend to think very little about. So come on, Madam Coriander, and once you come in. Oh, come ye one and all, take the melting pot, swim well, crack no rats, you salt the boy, yeah, romantic sweat. Oh, but America, my dish is still.
funding for KHOI is made possible in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. In the heart of Ames, the Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun. Located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza, the Farmers Market provides fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment every Saturday.